So you know the routine. You've been to the dance with me before.
Yes.
We're just going to go through the bullshit that is the wasteland of the Republican Party. And don't you dare ask me why I'm still a Republican.
I won't.
I know you will. Go ahead. Actually, it's kind of a meme now. We got to do it. So.
I know. So, yeah. And
look on your face like, okay, bitch, I'm waiting for you to come on over. I know that look. I know that look. That's exactly what that look is. Like, yeah. All well, this shit. How you like it now?
I'm not going to say a word.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. It's such a great joy to have everybody with you. I've really been hesitant to do this Happy New Year thing because of all the shit that took place on January 6th. We're going to get into that. Absolutely. Trust me on that. But I did want to take a moment to welcome everybody to the Michael Steele Podcast, the 2021 version. And it's such a pleasure to have everybody here at the table. I'm excited because my girl is back in the house with us. And she has been throwing down some serious noise in the last few weeks, both over at LPTV and on Twitter. And she's just one of the folks you need to listen to and get to know a lot about. She is Tara Settmayer, a CNN political commentator. She did that gig. ABC News political contributor. She does that gig. And a former GOP communications director on Capitol Hill. She's a senior advisor to one of my favorite, and I know a lot of my listeners' favorite operations, the Lincoln Project. She is currently the host of the Honestly Speaking with Tara podcast. She regularly appears on CNN's primetime programs and contributes to ABC's The View, Good Morning America, and Nightline. She's also made some numerous appearances on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. And we haven't been on together on that show yet. That will be
much fun.
I gotta send Bill a little note saying, dude, you gotta do the set by steel kind of deal.
Yes.
Tara, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome back. Happy New Year and all that.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you on anything. You come on our show, The Breakdown on Lincoln Project TV all the time, and we appreciate you. We have so much fun over there. We get the late night Michael Steele oftentimes, which is the best version. I know that Michael Steele all the time, but I also know when you have to behave. So it's wonderful when you are able to let loose like you are on your podcast and on our show, because it's always a good time. So,
well, it is a good time. And I have to thank our friend Ari Malber for the late night Michael Steele.
Yes.
That is so Ari. But it's a lot of fun. And yeah, there is that Michael Steele, which a lot of folks don't get to see too often.
Right.
I get to shine a little bit on him during the podcast. So let's just get into the serious for a moment, because our nation was rocked a week ago. On January 6th, a day along with December 7th, 1941, that will live in infamy for the first time, since the Civil War. We had neighbor turn on neighbor. We had family member turn on family member as Americans stormed the nation's capital not just do damage to the physical structure, but as we are now finding out, Tara, to hang the vice president of the United States.
Insane.
To kidnap and possibly kill the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. It's just such a profoundly important moment. What was your immediate sense at that time? So take us back a week, if you can, to that time. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're doing your thing, and all of a sudden your phone blows up. You look at your TV monitor, and the world's changing.
So I am in protest that this is a new year yet. So you wish everyone a happy new year. I feel like 2020 is the crazy X that won't go away. And it will not officially be, it will not officially be 2021 for me until January 20th at 12:01 when Joe Biden takes the oath of office, because 2020 just won't die. So there's that. We'll do a happy new year after January 20th.
There you go.
Last week was one of the most difficult days for me. Prior to that, I hadn't cried so many tears in frustration, in hurt, in heartbreak for this country since June 1st, when I saw the troops move in and tear gas and, you know, violently clear out a peaceful protest in Lafayette Park so that the president could have that disgusting photo op. I cried tears that day because I said, what is happening in America, turning our law enforcement and troops on peaceful protesters? That rocked me. This was worse because there was loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was home that day, sitting down, getting prepared to watch, as most of us were, what was normally a pro forma event of certifying the Electoral College. Most people don't even bat an eye at January 6th, right? I never had before. It was just kind of usually, you know, when I worked in Capitol Hill, it was just another day where we were preparing for the new Congress. And you just kind of kept it moving. But that was not the case. And I have a mug that my husband bought me for Christmas one year. It says, "Welcome to the shit show," which I pull out usually when there's going to be something eventful happening. And I took a, you know, kind of a funny photo with my mug as I settled in to watch.
Right.
And then it went from me screaming at the TV at these ridiculous Republicans who were protesting the free and fair election of Joe Biden to absolute horror as I saw the crowds beginning to assemble.
Right.
And I said, oh boy. Now, my husband is a federal law enforcement officer who was on duty that day, but not at the Capitol.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's yeah, right.
No,
yeah.
Thank God. But he was at work in the morning and watched the crowds amassing and, you know, had some interaction with some of the soon-to-be rioters. And I remember him telling me, he had seen some of them the day before too. And I remember him saying to me as this started to unfold and become what it became, because he thankfully was home later in the afternoon when all hell was breaking loose. And he said, you know, I could just feel the evil in the air. He said, you know, he's been an agent for 20 years. So he's seen a lot and been around the world many times. And he said, the looks on these people's faces, the way that they were, their disposition, he had a sense of evil that he had not sensed before. And my husband is not melodramatic in any way. And for him to say that was pretty jarring. Mm-hmm. And it was appropriate given what we saw unfold. We were texting back and forth. I have two of my closest friends are former coworkers of mine when we were on the Hill. One of them is one of my best friends. And we text all day long, all the time about what's going on. And we started going back and forth. Do you see what's happening? Oh my God, they're breaching the Capitol. Holy cow, this crowd is completely out of control. And then it was, where in the hell is the Capitol Police and the reinforcements?
You think so? It went from inside job.
At first, I didn't want to believe that because, you know, I tend to lean toward the side of law enforcement on things, given, you know, I grew up in a law enforcement family and I'm married to a law enforcement officer. However, right. I am not naive to the elements within law enforcement who are a problem. And the more that I have talked to people and experts and begun to study this a bit more, mm-hmm. I am more concerned about these elements within law enforcement that are sympathetic to these white supremacists and sympathetic to, you know, Trump's viewpoint of the world. And I think this, as we have found out more since then, it is more alarming. I mean, federal agencies are getting these warnings telling them to stop posting things. You need to behave yourselves. We're not partisan. You know, the military, the Joint Chiefs sending out a memo to the military telling them that they are there.
But it's crazy. How has that been allowed to happen? You and I know in the circles that we cover inside our own community,
right?
That this white nationalism has been germinating inside our military as well as our law enforcement ranks for some time.
Yeah.
So it is now, I guess you could say, being exposed by the fact that we have video of, I mean, look, you're taking selfies with a guy who's
right,
you know, with, you know, hoisting a Confederate flag over his shoulder. I'm like, dude, okay.
Yeah, like, how stupid are you, first of all, you idiot? Why would you memorialize any of this? Second of all, it's like, did you not notice what was going on? There was literally an insurrection happening. You know, a mob of violent rioters were taking over the Capitol, and you're taking a freaking selfie. I saw that initially because we did a special on Lincoln Project TV on the breakdown that night. We went live because of everything that was happening. And that I had seen in real time. And I was horrified by it. I'm like, what are you doing?
So then we
found out more. So there, you know, there's like 15 officers that are under investigation with the Capitol Police.
And there'll be more.
And then you have the suspension of I don't know if they've been suspended, but she's under investigation with the Secret Service for posting alarming things sympathetic to the insurrectionists, which is unacceptable. She's a sergeant in the uniform division assigned to the White House in the Secret Service.
Right.
So what are you doing? And the military, you have Congressman Jason Crow of Colorado, Democrat, who sent a letter to the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, asking that National Guardsmen be vetted for any domestic terrorist sympathies. You have the Joint Chiefs of Staff sending out a memo to all the armed forces, reminding them that their oath of office is to the Constitution, not to a person.
Right.
You know, this is, we're in a very perilous time.
How did we
miss it? This is what happened. I've been talking to some homegrown extremism experts. And if I may suggest a guest for your podcast, Dr. Errol Suthers.
Okay.
He is a veteran of the FBI. He is he has a PhD in homegrown terrorism. He runs the homegrown terrorism center at USC out in California. Really, really smart guy and knows this stuff. And he told me that this has been because of the shift in the FBI, our focus after 9/11 went to foreign terrorists, that they basically deprioritized the white nationalist homegrown terrorism stuff.
Right.
And that's been going on for the last 20 years. And it basically has not been a priority. And in 2009, and you remember this because I remember this, I was on the Hill. You were coming in as RNC chair. Mm-hmm. The DHS report that came out about right-wing domestic terrorism, extremism, was the number one threat.
It was one of the first things.
One of the first things Napolitano put out. And guess what happened to it?
One of the first things I looked at with the emergence of the Tea Party inside the RNC.
And what happened to that report?
They
tabled it.
Getting briefed on that and trying to assess exactly what this thing that was beginning to emerge around the country was all about. Now, ostensibly, the Tea Party of 2009 is not the same Tea Party of 2013, 14, 15, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to look at the seeds of germination.
Right. There are elements there.
The elements and the origins of things.
Mm-hmm.
The white nationalism piece is, go ahead.
You know, my point in bringing that report up is that Republicans freaked out at the time and said they rejected that idea because we were so focused on radical Islamic terrorism and terrorism abroad that nobody wanted to hear anything about what was happening on our own soil because they framed it as an attack on Second Amendment rights people. And it was just progressives trying to take away our guns and rights and all of that. And they ended up tabling it. It ended up not becoming a law enforcement priority with the federal government because of the backlash from Republicans. What a mistake that was. Huge mistake.
There are a lot of mistakes like that that were made, you know, beginning going back to 9/11 itself and the,
right.
and the attitude that sort of emerged that I think we now have paid a dear price for.
Absolutely.
In terms of personal freedoms and other decisions that were made. But on the white nationalism piece and the law enforcement and all those other various parts. The thing that I think trips me out is the fact that we know these elements are there. They have been there, sprinkled throughout society, manifest themselves in a variety of ways. And yet, even on the heels of the Oklahoma bombing, and we know exactly what that was, that our government refuses to use two words, domestic terrorism. And calling the thing what it is gets us a long way down the road to dealing with that thing, because all of a sudden now you're treating it the way you would treat any other terrorist organization, operation, or individual. You're not, just because they got a red, white, and blue MAGA hat on their head mm-hmm. and wrap themselves in a Confederate flag with the American flag, doesn't mean that they're somehow free from the stain of being a terrorist. Because what you had happen last week was an act of terror. It is the textbook definition. They were trying to influence the outcome of an election by a terrorist act. That if that did not result the way they wanted to, they were prepared to kill people.
Right. It doesn't get any more terrorist. Terroristy than that, right?
Exactly.
the idea of not calling it out for what it is interesting one, because isn't that what Republicans used to say about the Democrats not calling out radical Islam for what it was, right?
Yep.
Got to define what it is. Call it what it is, or else you can't. You know, if you can't define your enemy, how are you going to fight them? And it's like, here the tables have been turned, because it's them now who are engaging in this. They're the ones who are a threat now to our republic, really. And, you know, no one wants to call domestic terrorism what it is. What a lot of people don't know is that there are domestic terrorism is not in the statutes. You don't get charged with domestic terrorism in this country.
Right.
The Oklahoma City bombers, Timothy McVeigh was not charged with domestic terrorism. He was charged with weapons charges and murder charges, because 168 people were killed.
Right, right.
That's what he was charged with.
Right.
So it's maybe we need to redefine that. There's some discussions within the law enforcement community about what to do about it, which is why they use the term homegrown extremism a little bit more in the law enforcement circles, because you are like the Zernayoff brothers, for example, during the Boston bombing,
right?
Do we consider them domestic terrorists?
I do.
No. Well, most people don't, because they came from, they came over here from, another country, and then they were radicalized, right? But they were here for 10 years. They were Americans by then.
That's why I don't. That's
right.
Why.
Well, you're a little more plugged in.
I consider them domestic terrorists, because it's not like they came over here on Thursday and committed a terrorist act on Tuesday.
Right. They were assimilated.
Here 10 years. Mm-hmm. So they've been to enough popcorn joints and movie theaters and drive-throughs, right?
Right. So, they were radicalized here.
Right.
And so a lot of people don't associate that with domestic terrorism. They think it's just the crazies.
KKK.
Exactly. And so, we cannot ignore this anymore. More of the domestic terrorists, right? We'll just use that term for purposes now. More people have died at the hand of domestic terrorists than they have of foreign ones in the last 25 years.
Of course they have.
A lot of people don't know that data, right? They think of 9/11. Well, guess what? More police officers have been killed by these militia groups and domestic terrorists, and more Americans have. Look, from Sandy Hook to Parkland, these people are domestic terrorists.
So, in the face of last week's horror, two parts. One, how do you see the Lincoln Project operationalizing politically in a post-Trump era? Okay. So how does Lincoln Project position itself? And two, what are lessons that we all can take away from 2020 and the first week of 2021? as we begin to look at this post-Trump era, and of course that ties into how you start up, you know, how organizations like Lincoln Project will operationalize what they do. But then again, how as we as citizens begin to function in this new space?
So the Lincoln Project, you know, isn't going anywhere because we became a movement that was a more than just rooting out Donald Trump and defeating him. It was also about defeating Trumpism, which right. clearly has not been defeated. And we are, as a pro-democracy organization, we're also an accountability and transparency organization. We are going to call out the people who are acting against our democracy, who are actively trying to subvert it. Well, January 6th just upped the ante for us because there were a number of people, elected officials, who were a part of this. They, you know, Josh Hawley cannot just slink away thinking
he's looking to slink, baby.
He's trying, but he's limping away because people have called him out for his role in this. You know, Ted Cruz, these members of the House, Paul Gosar, Mo Brooks, Andy Biggs, who were directly in contact with the organizers of the Stop the Steal. Mo Brooks, who was there at the rally beforehand, telling people to go up there and kick some ass. You know, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, has a clause in there about holding office and being part of an insurrection.
That's right.
So they're going to have to answer for that. And I really do hope.
I can't wait for that moment.
I hope that the Congress takes action against them. You have Representative Mikey Sherrill from my home state of New Jersey asking for an investigation. She's a tough chick. I love it. I don't care if she's a Democrat. She's a tough chick. She's a helicopter pilot, veteran, doesn't take any crap. And
she's got an eye for it. She said she looked at the day before. She was like, who are these people in the
right? Post? Why were members possibly escorting some of these people throughout the Capitol complex because they were not allowed to have any any Capitol tours anymore. So the only way you could get into the Capitol complex, and the tours were halted because of COVID, not because of a terror threat or a threat to the Capitol. It was because of COVID rules. So she's like, and she wasn't the only one who noticed. Some other members noticed and actually sent a note to the sergeant at arms saying, excuse me, why are all these randoms in the Capitol complex when they're not supposed to be? And who are the members that are escorting them? Because that's the only way you could get in.
Right.
And she feels strongly that those were people who were part of the riot. So was it a recon mission? What the hell was this? Any member, if they did that, should be kicked out. They should be expelled. So, but the point is that these are things that are moving forward to hold these members accountable. And the Lincoln Project is right there with it. We have something now, a hashtag Abe is watching. And we've added it to our show because it's something we kind of say casually anyway. But we're starting to make it more formal as something we're doing because the corporations and the political action committees and people who have decided to not do business anymore with these Republicans who are part of this the sedition caucus, that list has been growing. And we started pointing it out. You know, we were one of the first to call out some of the banks and the, you know, the PGA and people who were doing business with the Trump organization after that.
The lawyers, the law firms, all of that.
The law firms before that, when the Stop the Steal crap started, were saying, hey, we're not trying to dox you because we don't want to do that. But we want to shine a light on the people who are enabling this behavior because it's against our democracy. And that's what we've done. And now we have other our sights are set on the Josh Hawleys, the Ted Cruzes, and you've got the 2022 midterms coming up. The coup caucus, as we're calling them. Those are all people that do not deserve to have their seats in Congress coming up in 2022. And the more light we shine on them, the better, because the American people need to make a decision. Are they on the side of the country? Are they on the side of America? Right. Or are they going to side with Trumpism?
Yeah, that's a big and important question. And it will mean a lot, particularly to Republicans next year, because despite the best face that they can put on it, they're going to be in a very difficult posture trying to regain both the House and the Senate next year.
Not now,
they had a chance, possibly,
despite the fact that so many of these Republicans have become very Trumpy, Right. They're within striking distance of taking over the House. They won seats despite Trump losing, but they did lose control of the Senate, which is a big deal. Mitch McConnell losing power is a huge deal. And it's, it was a political earthquake for the Republicans and a wake-up call. And in light of that, you had an insurrection, which should have been the final straw, right? That should have been the exit ramp for these Republicans to finally say, I'm done with Donald Trump. I'm done with what Trumpism represents. This is not what we stand for. This is like against the Constitution. It doesn't get any more un-American than a freaking insurrection and an attempted assassination of the vice president with mobs chanting, hang Mike Pence. And for the whataboutism crowd, I'm sorry, that was not fucking Antifa. So yeah. Stop it. Okay. Antifa wasn't, they're not interested in hanging Mike Pence. This is absurd. That whole, I don't want to hear it. I used to think that political correctness was going to be the death of our country. I believe now fully it's whataboutism. This idea of these false moral equivalents and nothing, there's no right and wrong. It's always, well, the other guy did that. What is that? It's like the Pee Wee Herman defense. I know you are, but what am I?
We dealt with that with our kids when they were 4 and 5.
Exactly. That is not a viable approach to things. That's not how adults communicate. No. So the Republican Party now, they had the exit ramp and they didn't take it because 147 of them, after the violent insurrection, still voted to overturn the election. And then, after everything we found out since that day to now about Trump's inaction, how he was delighted in what was going on because it was his people, which is a very sick and sociopathic way to look at what was going on, right, where I'm over here in tears watching the Capitol. We didn't know what was going to happen. And we saw loss of life and everything else. This guy is getting off on it. That in and of itself was impeachable. Refusing to send in the National Guard, not allow, being begged and pleaded by everyone. Your vice president is in harm's way and you don't care. It was just nuts. Despite all of that, despite the lack of contrition, despite the fact that he didn't go before the American public other than the hostage videos that were just absurd.
Right. Right.
Despite the fact that we found out that there were, these people were emboldened and that there were threats to 50 capitals and that they might do more, despite the fact that private companies were deplatforming him because of the violent threats that were being planned on these platforms, despite all that, only 10 Republicans went along with impeaching him.
Well, it tells you where the party is. It tells you the state of the party, and the state of the party is one that is it's clearly controlled and locked in by Trump at this point. And
which
and
leads me to ask you, my friend, why in the hell are you still a Republican? Come over to our independent side, please.
All right, so we're going to take a quick
break. The water's warm.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with my friend Tara Settmayer after this.
Come on over.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation, as you know, with Tara Settmayer, who is of CNN, the Lincoln Project, ABC. She is quite the political operative and mensch. She's got that going on, and she likes to ask tough questions of really nice guys.
Oh, stop it. Everyone knows that I'm going to give you shit about this forever because you were the one person that had the most influence on me not leaving the Republican Party for so long, because I considered it a couple times during the Trump era, and you always told, kind of talked me off the ledge, you and my mom actually, for a little while there. And then she said to hell with them too. And it was really just you. And I said, it makes sense. It makes sense. And then we held on together the election, right? Yeah. I wanted to wait to see.
I
still had hope that we could do something with these people. But once Donald Trump, after the election, came out there and said, this election has been stolen. I've won by a landslide. The whole thing was rigged. While inside the White House, just disgracing the East Room of the White House, I said, and I waited to see, like about 12 hours from there to see, will Republicans come out right away and tell him to cut this shit? you know, this is against now our constitutional process. No, they didn't. They went along with it and they propped him up. And I said, there is no hope for these people. They're irredeemable. I want nothing to do with this.
I totally got that. And you and I chatted and before the decision was made official. And I have mad respect for it. I understand it. And there have been literally TikTok moments for me where I've swung from, I'm getting the hell out of this place to, okay, I'll stay. But it's like I said before, you know, the reason is I believe in the underlying principle. So for me, it's working towards restoring that. And I'll be honest, I don't care if it's inside the GOP. It can be inside something else.
Right.
I want to terraform that ground and re-energize those roots again that reach back to, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower and you know, Lincoln and Reagan and all of those folks who were part of that soil.
Right. Why we became Republicans in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we clean out the crap, you know, because as a farmer will tell you, there's good shit and there's bad shit when it's time to fertilize the soil.
Right. So, we all eat mushrooms. If you love mushrooms, you know where they come, where they thrive from.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, you know, so and the second thing, as I said to you before, is I know staying just pisses all the right people off.
Right. I know.
And because the easiest route for them is to have people who remind them of those principles and those ideas in their face saying, nah, bitch, that's not how that works. That's not what we believe.
Right.
That's not what we believe. And stop showing your ass like my mama says, right? And get real with the program. I'd asked you, you answered the first part. Now I want to get your take on the second part, which is we go into 2021.
Right. What
can
people do?
A new administration that's coming on January 20th at 12 noon. We see how the Lincoln Project is getting positioned and repositioned to take the fight to the Josh Hawleys and the Ted Cruzes, mm-hmm. rightly so. What do you think the American people need to think and take away from the lessons of 2020 and certainly January 6th as we welcome in, and we know at least half of 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump aren't going to be down with welcoming in Joe Biden.
Right.
How do we as a nation begin to turn that corner where we can look each other in the eye and see your beautiful brown eyes or your beautiful green eyes or your beautiful, you know, blue eyes as opposed to blue in the color of, you know, what party you belong to or red in the color of what party you belong to?
I think that is a really difficult question that has been made more difficult after the insurrection because of how many people still believe that the election was stolen and who are still siding with Donald Trump. I mean, 77% of the Republican Party still backs Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So even after bloodshed, after a police officer was murdered, you know, after people's lives were taken in this whole thing, it didn't matter. Bloodshed still did not move them away from him. And he was directly responsible for inciting it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I will be honest. I'm not sure how we turn the page with the people who are unwilling to move. You know, in order to have a conversation, you have to have a willing participant on the other side.
Right.
So I can say that for me, I think the activism that has been generated by so many people who've been paying attention, who said, this is not the country I want, and went out and voted and worked on campaigns and, you know, did the calls and were poll watchers. I think that is a beginning to heal this country because we've got so many more people now engaged, paying attention. And I think they need to keep that energy up because as long as you're engaged, then you can hold people accountable.
How do you
repair the interpersonal relationships and things? I don't know. That is a tougher conversation and I'm not quite sure because it's tough. We literally were in a cold civil war.
We are. So, and we are. And that's not an important, that's an important point not to sleep on, because that I think that's very, very important. So it begs for me then the question to throw back at you, since you love to dog me about why I'm still a Republican, to throw back at you, what did being a Republican mean to you when you joined the party? Because for me, that's the linchpin. I think about that 17-year-old kid growing up in D.C., Washington, D.C., who was surrounded by all of these Democrats and the politics and the push as a young man, to, as a Black kid, you got to be a Democrat, the ba-ba-boom, ba-da-bing. But there was something that cut through all of that that spoke to me that sort of said, hey, dude, you can probably do this a little differently. Mm-hmm. What was it that moved you to join? Because you know what made you leave,
right?
It was Trump and Trumpism. The party moved away from where you stood and where your soil was fertilized, mm-hmm. many years ago,
yep.
by the ideals of freedom and entrepreneurism and limited government, etc. But what did it mean to you when you joined at the time?
Yeah, you started on that. You know, just because I chose to no longer register as a Republican doesn't mean that my belief system has changed. It right. hasn't.
That's just the party registration. That's
right. Yeah, that's just right. the R next to my name, and that's just right. the political vehicle in which you express your political association, right? But my worldview isn't any, well, it's a little different. My eyes are open to some things that weren't before. Right. But the fundamental conservative worldview has not changed for me. And right. you hit on that. Smaller government, individual responsibility, entrepreneurism, empowerment, not being a victim. Mm-hmm. You know, that victimhood mentality was something that I just could not get with on the other side. My mom was a single parent who had me at 21. I'm biracial. So I grew up with my mom in, you know, middle class, blue collar, white America. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy for my mom either as a single parent at 21 years old. Right. And she always taught me to never be a victim of your circumstance. Don't let anybody tell you you're any different or you can't do what you want to do or become what you want to become because you're a young woman of color. Right. The hell with that, you know? And so she instilled that kind of fighting spirit in me very young to never be, to be unapologetic for who God made me. And all of those concepts fit in the conservative view for me. And I looked at it and I looked at the people like Jack Kemp and his idea of providing a ladder of opportunity,
right.
not guaranteeing outcomes, you know, in an approach to people who were less fortunate. And, you know, and then, of course, obviously the bigger things about, you know, stronger military and,
right.
and being that shining city on a hill and not appeasing terrorists and appeasing our enemies. And but those fundamentals were important to me. And the Republicans, like the party of Lincoln, mm-hmm. they were the party that fought for democracy. They fought for the rights of, of the less fortunate, of the minority, you know, making sure that was important. And those things fell off because now the Republicans are the antithesis to all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're not the pro-democracy party anymore. We're not the party of fiscal responsibility anymore. We're not the party of empowering and individual responsibility. They've become a party of a bunch of whining, snowflake, seditious, insurrectionist, unadulterated, immoral, coup-loving boobs that deny science, deny facts, and don't even have a platform.
Right.
They become a cult of personality.
Right. Right.
That bloodshed and an insurrection, for God's sakes, did not even move them away back to their core values. They're not the party of law and order. They're not the party of non-appeasement. They're not the party of pro-democracy. They are an illiberal, anti-democracy, borderline authoritarian, populist nationalist danger to our country.
Right.
And that is something that is the antithesis of everything that brought me into the party in the first place.
Or we could express this the way our friend Rick Wilson, who had the quintessential throwdown on MSNBC with Joy Reid last yes. night.
The whiny bitches.
So if we just take a moment and just listen to this, yes. because it encapsulates exactly what Tara just talked about. So we're going to play that.
This whiny bitch victimhood from Matt Gaetz and Ken Buck and Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Cuckoo QAnon Green and all these other people. It is the most pathetic example of special pleading I've ever seen. They act as if they've been oppressed somehow, that the world is against them somehow. Well, guess what? Twitter and Facebook aren't banning you because you're a conservative. They're banning you because you suck. They're banning you because you say evil shit. They're banning you because you support a revolution against the government of this country and a free and fair election. This is the most remarkable thing about this to me, is all these tough guy swagger monkeys who act like they're the big, you know, alpha males. They're whining and bitching and moaning about Kathy Griffith holding up a mannequin head, or Nancy Pelosi tearing up a piece of paper. Come on, guys, toughen up.
I love it.
Yep,
I love
that's it. That's my partner in crime,
everyone. That's your partner in crime. That's my friend. He nailed it, and you nailed
exactly
it. And
right.
I think that's important for people to understand exactly what we're dealing with here. And then, but more importantly, to Rick's point and yours, it's one thing when you have that, when you have folks who are riled up and they show up with their Confederate flags and they're going to, you know, storm the castle, right? With their pitchfork and their torches.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing when Dr. Frankenstein is the one who's inviting the mob to the castle.
Right.
So that's when right. you have the members of Congress who created this, the president of the United States, who created these little Frankenstein monsters all mm-hmm. over the country, and then rallies them on the Capitol lawn, and then sits back and goes, you know, a week later, well, you know, I just think the Democrats need to focus on unity. They've got to, you know, President-elect Biden coming in and calling people names. We had 4 years of this president calling everyone on the planet a name. And you said nothing.
Right. The audacity of them to say that the act of impeaching Donald Trump was divisive was just one of the most infuriating lines of defense that they had during the impeachment process. And I sat there and watched them, as Rick said, be a bunch of whiny bitches complaining about this and that. And I thought to myself, first of all, impeaching Donald Trump is not dividing America. It's defending her.
I saw your tweet on that. That was excellent. That was a
Thank
nice
you.
Tweet.
You know, we are defending our country against this this threat. You know, Nancy Pelosi was right. He was a clear and present danger, and still is, as far as I'm concerned, until he's out of there. But that's what we're doing. We are defending democracy. We're not impeding it.
Right.
People are. And you are the ones that used to wrap yourselves in the American flag and walk around with your pocket constitutions. You fucking hypocrites, which is just what I thought every single time I heard one of those Republicans step to the microphone and whine and bitch and complain about how divisive and awful impeachment is. And, you know, we need to unify now. Get the hell out of here with that. Unify. You need to have accountability first. Okay. You don't get to just skip the part where you were, you know, an enabler, a collaborator in some instances of this heinous act against our country. You don't get to just skip away and say, well, no, now we need to unify. No, accountability has to happen, or else this will happen again and worse. So hats off to my friend Rick Wilson and for putting it in words that many of us can appreciate. But, you know, that's why I say it's so difficult for us to talk about unity and coming together when you have to, you know, in the Christian religion, right? God, you're there. He will forgive you. Forgiveness is important, right? And we always lay, you know, the blood of Jesus will forgive us for all our sins.
Right.
But there's another part to that. Repentance. There is no forgiveness without repentance. You have to repent for your sins. What does that mean? That means you ask for forgiveness and you do what it takes to change so you don't do it again, or commit to it at least.
Well, you should.
There's no repentance from the Republican Party in what they've done.
You need to tell that to the pastor who on Sunday had his congregation raise their hand, and then he proceeded to curse all those who had a hand in this election and stole this election away from President Trump. He literally used the Bible to curse people because of a political decision they made. This was the pastor of a church. So that speaks so much to...
And he's not alone, Michael.
There I know he's not.
Hundreds of them. And, you know, as Christians, you and I both know their judgment will be more harsh because they are responsible for their flocks. Yeah, and I say, I don't want to be anywhere near them when their judgment comes.
No, no, no. When we start lining up and if I see one in front of me, one behind me, I'm getting a different line. Because I know I'm in the wrong line.
I don't think you and I are going to be in that same line, to be honest.
I'm in the wrong lines. I'm like, it's like church lady on Sunday morning saying, you know, put the finger up and walk.
Right.
I'm going to another space. So I know you got to get out of here. Let's
start this
up with something hopeful and positive.
Yeah.
You started our conversation. I said, Happy New Year. You're like, nah, let's put a little pause on that until we get to January 20th.
Right.
Up the point. So in that spirit, looking at January 21st, the first day of the next 4 years, the first day really of the rest of this year with a new president, new vice president, new cabinet, new leadership across the country. What are you hopeful for? Big or small, policy or not, what is it that in light of all of this and what we've talked about, that is in many respects painful and ugly and depressing and frustrating, where do you see hope and what does it look like for you?
I see hope in the fact that more Americans made the right decision and chose Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to become the next president and vice president, because that meant that people were ready for adults to come back and govern, that they were ready for professionalism, for experience, for the crazy to go away and to go back to some normalcy when it comes to governing. There's a lot of healing that needs to happen. And, you know, I think Joe Biden's approach to life and his life experience has uniquely positioned him to be that person to usher that in. Because the attitude of the country comes from the top, right? He sets the tone. And I think that he understands uniquely more than anyone, given the amount of loss that he's experienced in his own life, he's uniquely positioned to set that tone with compassion, empathy, and experience to try to right the ship. And, you know, the country is reeling, not just from Donald Trump and Trumpism in itself, but from a global pandemic that is ravaging this country still worse than it was when it first hit us. And people are suffering. And that has to be addressed. So I'm looking forward to some unification behind getting our country out of this terrible slump caused by the vaccine. I mean, caused by COVID. Now that we have a vaccine and we have adults in the room that are going to say, listen, this is how we need to do it. And they can execute it in a way that is professional, that we're going to restore some trust in our institutions. These are things that we, you know, that we're not going to hear, thank God, rest in peace to Donald Trump's Twitter feed and some of the ridiculousness, you know, that we had to deal with coming from the government and official channels. That's going away. And I'm hopeful that so many Americans, we'll rally around just trying to our collective sigh of relief that the chaos chronicles of the Donald Trump era are gone and we can set a path forward to restoration and start to refocus now that this is not going to dominate our lives every single day in a way that was just debilitating. The adults are here and there's going to be a re-emphasis on being good people again and good governors, you know, the common good, the common thread, the sense of community that bound us together before, the idea of e pluribus unum and stop this division, just this tone of the government will be different. And it reminds me of what Ben Franklin said, that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom.
Right.
And the idea of getting back to that, because it's ultimately up to us. We have to decide the America we want to be and
Be it.
And be it. That's right.
And just be it. Tara Settmeyer, you are one of a kind and a good friend. And it is always a joy when you're in the neighborhood and you say hello and share some love with the folks who are part of the Steele podcast family. I really appreciate it. You folks will catch her on CNN. You'll catch her. Certainly check out Lincoln Project TV or LPTV.
Yes.
Very successful YouTube channel, right? You guys are
not only do we have our show, the show I co-host with Rick Wilson called The Breakdown, which comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 p.m. It live streams across all the Lincoln Project channels, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. But we're adding three new shows over the next couple of weeks that I think people will be very excited about. A show focusing on women's issues and kind of now that we have the historic first woman vice president and woman of color, that we need to elevate more female voices and the experiences of that. And we're doing a show focusing on more local issues. How do we root out Trumpism locally, putting a spotlight on that. And we're going to have a news program called The Lincoln Report. That's going to start off three nights a week where we highlight the news stories that we think are important for people to pay attention to. So be on the lookout for the announcements on that. And, you know, obviously follow the Lincoln Project on all our channels. Yep. At Project Lincoln on Twitter. And we're on Instagram and obviously the YouTube channel. Subscribe. And for me, I have a new podcast episode coming out for my 2021 podcast episode for Honestly Speaking is coming out. And all of those things.
Give me your Twitter handle real fast so I can follow you on Twitter.
Right. It's at Tara Settmeyer. Settmeyer. I'm the only one. There are no others.
It's easier. I had to go. Someone said, I'll sell you Michael Steele if you want. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to buy my name. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that.
I'm not a stupid Republican. Jeez.
Well, you're still there.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you might be a glutton for punishment, my friend. I don't know.
You see, we end as we begin, people. This is how it is in my world. Tara Settmeyer, thank you so much.
Nothing stupid about you, Michael Steele.
Being a part of the family, we appreciate you so much. Folks, that does it for this time together. You know how I feel about the download thing. Do it whenever you can because it makes me feel oh so yummy. You know, follow me and get download on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you get that podcast thing on. And certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Check out the website, Michael Steele Network, www.michaelsteelenetwork. And I'll see you guys next week. And you know what I'm going to say right now. You know exactly what I'm going to say. Take care of yourself, be safe, and wear the damn mask. And get the vaccination. All right, guys. Later.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands in stock.